start. I don't know how far we're gonna get in terms of these notes. I noticed we're just on page 3 of the 9 pages of them. There's no way we're gonna finish this today. We'll just stretch it over into next week. Material is more important than a lot of the stuff in chapter 16 anyway. So if we have to give that a bit of a cursory reading, that's so be it. I don't want to shortchange this chapter because I think it's not only is it one of the most important chapters in the book, it's probably one of the most important things he's ever written in terms of his understanding of human development and genuineness, what he really calls genuineness, but later what we call optimism. Genetic method, then, is the set of heuristic structures that will be used in the study of development. So that's what he's going to be setting out now for the rest of the chapter. What are the heuristic structures for the study of development? Now, those will take on concrete specificity in the case of studying a plant development or animal development or human development, but at least he'll state some generic heuristic structures for the study of development. This method will be part, then, of the integral heuristic structure of proportionate being and so of metaphysics. The basic heuristic notion of genetic method is the notion of development as just outlined. And in plants, there will be a single development, namely organic. In animals, a twofold development, organic and psychic. And in human beings, a threefold development, organic, psychic, spiritual. Intelligence, so far. Spiritual development is far more than intellectual development. It's also morally religious, and those come later in the book. The general notions of genetic method would be the following. First of all, in any of these things, whether you're talking about plants, animals, or human beings, there is to be affirmed an individual existing unity, a unity, identity, whole, a thing. It's individual by central potency, it's a unity by central form, it's existence by central act. All of that was said last week. There are also, in each of these, there are conjugate potencies, forms, and acts. In human beings, think again of habits as an example of a conjugate form. A habit is a conjugate form. It's a scheme of recurrence. Okay? It sets up a scheme of recurrence of certain types of actions or operations. There are potencies towards the development of these forms, and there are acts, namely operations, that follow upon these forms. But the habit would be a very clear example of a conjugate form in a human being. Well, it's the same thing, analogously, there are in plants. There are dispositions, whatever language that disposition has to psychological frame or meaning to it. But there are similar types of things in plants and animals, analogous. So there are also conjugate potencies, forms, and acts. But since central potency, form, and act are constants throughout development, development is to be formulated in terms of conjugate potency, form, and act. There's no change in the individuality, in my individuality, the central potency, towards my central form, towards my central act, okay, existence. The development is in my habits. It's in my conjugate forms, and it's in the potency towards those and the acts that follow upon them, and those acts are potency for the development of new forms. That's where development takes place. It takes place in the development of physical, through exercise, and psychic, and intellectual, and spiritual conjugate forms. Later on, we will see that there are supernatural conjugate forms that are the gift of God, charity, faith, hope, and there's development in those as well. Conjugate acts are occurrences or events into susception, assimilation, excretion on the organic level, perception, pronation, response on the psychic level, feeling, and so on. Insight, formulation, reflective understanding, and judgment on the intellectual level. These acts are recurrent with a regularity that establishes schemes of recurrence. When you get into a certain discipline, all right, physics, chemistry, biology, philosophy, theology, there are recurrent acts. Your intellectual processes move in schemes of recurrence. Of these acts of insight, formulation, reflective understanding, judgment. This is what Teresa of Avila would say for spiritual direction. Get someone who knows theologically. Okay, you can can have a very holy person, but they can't, they don't have the insights and the reflection, the formulation, and so on and so forth. For a spiritual director, you want someone with the habitual ability to formulate insightfully what's going on and to pass judgment on it. That's why she said a good theologian, as long as the person is a decent human being, but they don't have to be at the heights of mystical prayer to be good spiritual directors, but they do have to know what's going on. Anyway, that's just an example of the type of thing. The regularity of these acts, whether it's at the psychic or the intellectual level, their regularity is not fixed in some single scheme, but there's a flexible circle of ranges of schemes. That's an image that's hard to get, it's always been hard for me to imagine, but a flexible circle of ranges of schemes so that it can move in different ways. So that, for instance, a lecturer can lecture on the same material 1 week in one way and the next week in another way, and it's the same material that's being formulated, and one week it might be better than another, and so on and so forth. But there's the formulation is built into a habitual form in the person, but it's flexible so that they're not repeating the same words every time. It's a flexible formulation. That's just again an example of what this flexible circle of ranges of schemes would be. So that the same organism, the same psychic habits and dispositions, the same intellectual developments can result in widely different operations, conjugate acts, under different conditions and in accord with different circumstances. And again, if I were trying to teach, as Tom Daly in Australia has done, to try to teach a lot of it to people of ages 11 and 12, but he doesn't have them read this book, obviously. he gets them to attend to different operations and to come to own them, and to own the relations between them. That before you pass a judgment, you should have an insight and that sort of thing. It's pretty good. But again, he's working from his mastery of the material, and he's expressing it in ways that are very different from expressing it to people of the extraordinary sophistication. conjugate forms of the organism, psyche, and intelligence are discovered by proceeding from the schemes of organic, psychic, and intellectual recurrence, proceeding from those to underlying correlations. And inversely, once those underlying correlations are known, you can work out the lists of the possible schemes of recurrence, just as Lonergan did in setting up the procedures of mathematicians, empirical scientists, people of common sense. But when you've got the underlying, what common sense is, then you work out sequences in which it can perform. Under bias, not under bias, under this bias, not under those biases, free from all bias, and so on. Again, an example of the kind of thing that he's talking about. There are conspicuous differences between physics and chemistry on the one hand, and biology, psychology, and intellectual theory on the other hand. Not only in the flexibility of circles of ranges of schemes, but also in the development itself, the advance of conjugate forms from generic indeterminacy to specific perfection, so that the flexible circle of schemes of recurrence shifts and expands as it does in living things, and all of his examples are in living things. Thus, while classical method is concerned to reduce regular events to laws, genetic method is concerned with sequences in which correlations and regularities change. So the laws change. The correlations change, the regularities change, the laws change. Its objective is to grasp the sequence itself, to proceed from the correlations and regularities of one stage to those of the next. Piaget shows this almost literally in his analysis of a child cognitive development, showing it's literally how correlations and regularities of one stage shift to those of the next under the pressure of new experiences, new questions, and so on. A sequence of operators that successively generate further functions from an initial function. The heuristics assumption of genetic method is the notion of development itself, and it determines the course of a development, it figures out the course of a development by a scissors-like action, just as in physics you've got differential calculus and then the accumulation of the data and the two come together. So here you've got an upper blade and a lower blade. this metaphor of the upper blade and the lower blade will become more important as the book proceeds. It becomes extremely important when we get to chapter 17 on hermeneutics. And there's an upper blade for hermeneutics. A lower blade is the accumulation of data. The upper blade is what he calls the universal viewpoint and the sequence of the levels and sequences of expression. But here you've got the upper blade is the general procedures from above, number 16, and then the lower blade is the more specialized procedures from below. It's the scissors-like action, particular and general. The general procedures are the ones from above, the particular from below. Okay, so number 16, the general procedures then in studying plants, in studying animals, in studying human beings are three. That the general direction of development will be from generic potentiality to specific determination. When an infant is born, there's all kinds of things that he or she could become, generic potentiality. But the course of development moves to specific determination so that the person ends up as being a theologian, a wife and mother, and a lawyer, a musician, a mathematician, Jesuit. The general mode of operation is that the sequence of conjugate forms is a sequence of higher integrations of otherwise coincidental lower manifolds of events in a circular interaction of potency form and act. And thirdly, the field in which all of this takes place is the finality of the universe. We are part, development of plants, animals, human beings is part of this upwardly directed dynamism of proportionate being to ever fuller realization, the generalized emergent probability of being. So those are, that's like the differential calculus for the physicist, to have these three principles, that development will be from generic potentiality to specific determination. The general development will be through the sequence of conjugate forms, and that the field is this emergent probability. That functions for the student of development the way differential calculus is to function in physics, the way dialectic should function in the study of human societies. And we'll see more of dialectic again when we get to chapter 17. The more specialized directives from below will differ according to whether you're studying organisms, animals, human beings. But in all of these, measuring, which is so important in physics and chemistry, measuring loses its significance and efficacy as one mounts to higher integrations. It loses in significance because the higher integration is within limits independent of the exact quantities of the lower manifolds that it systematizes. And moreover, the higher the integration, the greater is the independence of lower quantities. And he gives these silly examples, but they indicate what he's talking about. The meaning of one's dreams is not a function of one's weight. Unless, of course, your dream is telling you that you've got to lose weight. But then it's an existential meaning. But it's not a function of the measurement of your weight. And one's ability in mathematics does not vary with one's height. And again, you can use Hawking here as an instance of how scientific genius is very independent of the lower neural manifold. Classical method, besides this loss in significance, there's also a loss in efficacy. What difference would it make? Classical method can select among the functions that solve differential equations by appealing to measurements and empirically established curves. But what the differential equation is to classical method, the general notion of development is to genetic method. While the differential equation is mathematical, the general notion of development is not. And so it follows that while measurement is an efficacious technique for finding boundary conditions that restrict differential equations, it possesses no assignable efficacy when it comes to particularizing the general notion of development. How would you measure, you know, someone's intellectual acuity, someone's ability to speak with ease about a particular subject? How would you measure the refinement of feeling? Is there something there that you can measure? There probably is. But is it going to give you the meaning that's there in terms of like the refinement of affective response to particular situations or whatever? How would you measure the love that is manifest in the incarnate word of God on the cross? There's no mathematical There's no way of giving that any mathematical significance. But it's the height, again, of religious development. Regarding the organism, one starts from the thing for us. So all of this anatomy and physiology he considers to be purely descriptive. You start with the thing for us, as exhibited to our senses, anatomy, Gray's anatomy, or any anatomy. Relate by insight the described parts to organic events, occurrences, operations. So the heart pumps the blood and all of this sort of stuff, but all that's descriptive. Refer each part to what it can and will do. Relate the capacity of each part to the capacities of the other parts, physiology. Then move to explanation. From the parts as organs, move to conjugate forms, move to laws, move to the relations among themselves in ways that you might express in some kind of symbolic notation. Okay? Systematizing otherwise coincidental manifolds of chemical and physical processes. Thus, you link physiology with biochemistry and biophysics. Now, here, of course, you still have measurement, biochemistry and biophysics. But what he's saying is measurement loses its significance as you move from the organism to the psyche, to the spirit. These three steps reveal the higher system as integrator of an underlying manifold of cells, chemical processes, and physical changes. Now, we've got here the integrator and the operator, two terms that are of tremendous significance from this point on, again, in the book. So there's the higher system in the plant as the integrator of the underlying manifold of cells and processes and so on and so forth. But that higher system is also, in living things, the higher system is, simply by living, is also an operator. It's putting forth materials, potency, acts, operations, occurrences for the development of, for the emergence of further development. So the higher integration is at once integrator of what's happened up to this point and operator of what's coming beyond. It's much easier to speak about this in terms of the human psyche and human intellectual development than it is unless you're a botanist. If I were a botanist, I could give you examples of how this is the case in the plant, how the higher integration at a given level is integrator of the plant's development up to that point, but operator of further development in the environment, or the environment that enters into it. It so integrates the underlying manifold as to call forth, by the principles of correspondence and emergence, its own replacement by a more specific and effective operator. In general, the operator is the upwardly directed dynamism named finality. But the relevant heuristic directive in genetic method is specified. How is it that the higher integration is also an operator of physical development? That's what it is to understand development. If you can understand how any stage in development is the operator of the next stage, if you can specify that. So if you can specify in human development how the point to which a child has come is not only an integrator of what has happened in the child's life up to that point, but is also the operator of the child's next step, if you can specify that. Or in your own intellectual development, if you can specify how your understanding of this book now is not only an integration of where you've come to this point, but an operator of where you will go from this point on. It operates, in that case, by giving rise to further questions. And there will always be further questions with regard to this kind of material. So specify the operator. Specify how the higher system is the source of the differences that appear in the next stage. Determine how it is the source of the concrete differences. The same heuristic structure is involved in the study of psychic and intellectual development. But those developments are more complex. In the animal, there is a twofold development, the organism, the body, and the sensitive consciousness, the psyche. And in the human person, for now, a threefold development. But that third one will not just be intellectual, but also be more religious. And there's a difference in the accessibility of the data. In the organism, both the underlying manifold, the plant, the underlying manifold, and the higher system are unconscious. In intellectual development, the underlying manifold is sensible and psychic, And the higher integration is in insight and judgment. They're both conscious. And in the psychic development, the underlying neural manifold is unconscious, but the higher system, the psychic integration, is conscious. The higher the level of integration, again, the greater the freedom from material limitation. The more dominant the dynamic and expansive aspect of the operator, think of Hawking again now. The operator is his question, right? That's what has moved him forward. It's not his body. It's his questions, and his intellectual development is freed from the material limitation of the body, because what's dominant is the expansive and dynamic aspect of his questions. That's what operates intellectual development. He can raise and answer questions while he's sitting in a wheelchair and can't talk. Okay. The more significant are the laws of development itself, and consequently the fuller is the development, not only on the higher level, but also on the subordinate levels, within the limits, of course. We've got some of those crippled, there isn't development there, but there would be at the psychic level, with all the images, would be incredible. So organic differentiation reaches its maximum in animals, psychic differentiation in human persons. All right, psychic development in the animal, first of all, and then intellectual development, and then he comes to the human person in number 23, where he tries to discuss all three together. So let's take it step by step. Psychic development in the animal, think of your cat or your dog. It's the higher integration on the move of conscious perceptions and coordinated responses as these integrate the underlying manifold of neural events. Dogs, I'm told, some dogs are capable of learning the meaning of up to 75 words. The dog we had, and the child, I think she knew four, but there's a certain, they are capable of coordinating their responses to certain things. There's a lateral movement to an increasing differentiation of the psychic events in correspondence with particular afferent and efferent nerves. You have to go into physiology to do all that. And an ascending movement to an increasing integration of perception and coordination of response. Think how a puppy is so unstable on its feet, and how the dog is fully grown, but there's been a coordination of all of those movements and responses. Comparative study of successive stages of normal and abnormal successions, similarities and differences in different subspecies and so on, all of that is a matter of specifying the higher system as operating. A given stage, a child even organically reaches psychically reaches a certain stage in psychic response, and that just provides the potential for the next stage. Or again, the coordinated response of bodily movements. You reach a certain stage and you start walking. And then when you start walking, that's potential for further development. It's the new integration is also operating further development. In intellectual development, the underlying manifold lies, again, in sensible presentations, imaginative representations. In accord with the principle of correspondence, insights emerge out of this to unify and coordinate, so that when we understand, we're not simply going through a kaleidoscope of sensations and images and feelings. There's some kind of unification, some kind of correlation. Out of that correlation, there comes the formulation in concepts, in thoughts, in words, to give rise sooner or later to further questions. The further questions operate further development. The conceptual construction is the higher system as integrator. The emergence of further questions effects its transition into the operator. So there's the conceptual system as an integrator, but you don't stop there. It's like Jung's theory that every conceptual system will give rise to questions. It's the conceptual system itself can't answer. So there has to be the emergence of a new conceptual system. So as a conceptual system, it's an integrator, but the questions that emerge from it will give rise to its shifting to a new conceptual system. Intellectual development enjoys an exceptional freedom from limitation and an exceptional control. from limitation. The higher system of the organism or of the psyche develops in an underlying material manifold of physical, chemical, cytological, cellular events that are subject to their own laws. The higher system of intelligence develops not in a material manifold, but in the psychic representation of material manifold. And there's so much freedom that we have over our images. We're capable of free images, so there's so much more freedom from the limitations of the underlying manifold. Hence, the higher system of intellectual development is primarily the higher integration, not of the person in whom the development occurs, but of the universe that he or she inspects. Major metaphysical statement there that takes a lot of pondering. And the freedom from control, the organism or the psyche justifies the higher system it becomes by its pragmatic success. While the pragmatic criterion is employed also by intelligence, still its availability commonly is confined to the short run and to superficial issues. The proper criterion of intelligence is not pragmatic. It's not pragmatic. It is not, you know, what is this going to get me? It's rather its capacity for critical reflection, for grasping the unconditioned, for determining the norms of investigations that are headed towards the unconditioned and therefore probable. It's the whole issue here of that what he's talking about there is the whole issue of the potential, at least purity, of the desire. Again, it's a question that came up last week in the context of the discussion of Girard, and it will come up again as we go on here. Is there the capacity for pure desire? Is there such a thing? The Buddhist will say yes. The purification of desire, or the Buddhist will say, well, rid yourself of desire, but the Lonerganian way of talking about that would be convert desire into pure desire. Purification of the motive at the heart of our beseeching, T.S. Eliot's writes, drawing on Julian of Norwich. The purification of the motive at the heart of our beseeching. That's the task. That's what he's talking about here. To purify the motive at the heart of our beseeching. So that desire is transformed. It's no longer the mimetic, acquisitive thing that Girard is talking about. But that there is the possibility of the proper criterion of intelligence, which is not what can it get me, but is it true? The capacity for critical reflection, grasping the unconditioned, and so on. But this is a challenge, this is a task. A pure desire is a task. It's not something that emerges without work. Being is a task. Theologically, under the conditions of original sin, we would say that, you know, our nature is not destroyed, but it makes authenticity a task. It makes it ever precarious. And part of that is the need for the purification of the motive at the heart of the deception. Okay, in the human person, organic, psychic, and intellectual development are not three independent processes. So that, you know, we say the person, well, up to age 7, they develop organically, and then they develop psychic. No, it's all going on at once. They're interlocked. Throughout our lives, the intellectual provides a higher integration of the psychic. And it's not just the intellectual. If you want to get this more in terms of the spiritual, the intellectual does it cognitively, but spiritually, decisions, all right? Good decisions are a higher integration of feeling. When you've made a good decision in the context of self-transcending feeling, there's a shift that takes place. So there is a higher integration of the psychic through a good decision, and the right decision. That's one of the criteria for determining the decision as well. The psychic is a higher integration of the organic. Each level involves its own laws, its flexible circle of schemes of occurrence, its interlocked set of conjugate form. But no wonder human development is so complex. And we've got three simultaneous levels in which it's occurring. Each, and one of the levels can be way ahead of the other. The bodily development is way ahead in us of psychic and intellectual development. So it moves much faster. Each level involves its own laws, its flexible circle of schemes, its interlocked set of conjugate forms. Each set of forms stands in an emergent correspondence to otherwise coincidental manifolds on the lower level. A single human action involves a series of components: physical, chemical, organic, neural, psychic, intellectual, moral, religious. He'll go on to those later. And those components occur in accord with the laws and the realized schemes of their appropriate levels. However, while physical and chemical laws are static, higher correlations pertain to system on the move. And that's organic, psychic, intellectual, and system on the move. It's not system as a locked, closed thing. It's system on the move. We are system on the move. The heuristic structure of this triply compounded development is complex. What the existentialist discovers and talks about, what the ascetic attempts to achieve in himself or herself, what the psychiatrist endeavors to foster in another, what the psychologist aims at understanding completely, the metaphysician outlines in heuristic categories. And we'll give the six stages of the heuristic categories, and I think we do have time to get to at least mention them, but we can't go into the details on all of them. Six steps, then. First of all, at any stage, any one of us is an individual existing unity, differentiated by physical, chemical, organic, psychic, intellectual conjugates. Think of those, again, as habitual responses. Okay? Physically, chemically, organic, psychic, intellectual. The last three, organic, psychic, intellectual, exhibit respective flexible circles of ranges of schemes of recurrence that are exhibited in our spontaneous behavior, bodily movements, dealings with persons and things, the content of our speech and writing, and so on and so forth. We have habitual schemes of recurrence in those areas. And we sometimes recognize that we need to shift these things. Sometimes you recognize, well, I'm being too moody, too short with people, and so on. So you work on it. You work to change it. Experience shifts into diverse patterns, intellectual, biological, mystical, practical, dramatic, aesthetic, depending on one's interest, and those patterns ground differing relations among the levels of the conjugate. So he goes into a whole explanation of that on 495. So, but anyway, that's the first thing. An individual unity identity whole differentiated by all of these, conjugates of all of these levels, where at least in three instances there's constant development, organically, psychically, intellectually, morally, religiously. Secondly, this individual unity does develop. Neural, psychic, and intellectual conjugates pertain to system on the move. Higher functioning changes lower manifolds, and changing lower manifolds evoke modified higher integrations. So higher functioning, a new insight changes the lower manifolds of sense, image, and so on and so forth, and it gives rise to new images, and those changing manifolds will evoke yet higher integrations with new questions. For example, development occurs along the line of least resistance where it succeeds. That's a general law of effect, and it holds without a lot of flexibility, for instance, in plant life, plant development. But there is also in human life an anticipated law of effect. So that I learned at a certain point in my development that I can guide my own development, to a certain extent at least, by judging that certain acts will set up the potency for higher integrations. If I do this now, and I do this for a while, I'm going to be a lot better off than if I don't do it. And that's the anticipated law of effect. But if the acts, that there may be something that I want to get to. I can't do that, but I can do the first step towards it, and then the next step, and so on. And I can also, I added today while I was reading this over again, other acts will inhibit that potency. It will inhibit me from getting where I want to go. And I know that, and so I can, to a certain extent, and it's not always easy, perform the activations that will lead me in the direction that I want to get to. That's the whole business of learning, it's education, it's moral development, it's whatever you mean. Learning to play a musical instrument, you start at the beginning. And you've got to do that, but you've got to do it if you want to get where you're going to go. And omitting doing it means you'll never get there. Unless one asks the further questions, one remains with the insights one has already. And so intelligence doesn't develop. Inversely, because one wants to develop, one can frequent the lectures, read the books, then put the further questions and help one to learn. Doesn't mean that you're going to understand it immediately, but you can take those steps. Again, one develops through functioning. And until one has developed, one's functioning has the lack of poise, of economy, of effectiveness that betrays as yet undifferentiated potentialities. Unless one is encouraged out of shyness, timidity, pretended indifference, to zest and risk and do it, to humility and laughter, one will not develop, but merely foster the objective grounds for one's feeling of inferiority. Rather, one will not develop along a certain more common line, but one might seek and find less common fields in which to excel. And there, one will be apt to overcompensate for deficiencies elsewhere. Occasional glimpses there of real Newman-type writing, I think. Thirdly, there's a law of integration. The initiative of any given development may be organic, psychic, intellectual, or external. It may be moral, it may be religious, and those have to be added. But how a development can start, they don't start, there's no law that says it has to start at any one level. The initiative of a development may be sickness, Ignatius of Loyola, wounded on the fields of Pamplona and stuck in a room with no books to read except Lives of Saints. Okay? The organic initiative of an incredible mystical development. It may be psychic, it could be a dream. It might be intellectual, a question. It might be external, somebody might call you up short on something. But it remains fragmentary unless the various levels correspond. This law of integration specifies what is meant by human development. They've all got to come together. Ignatius could have just read those Lives of the Saints and had a few pious feelings and then gone back to the life that he lived before. But everything else had to come along. The psyche, the spirit, the intellect had to join in what was begun by, you know, in the theological framework, divine providence. But what, in terms of the actual sequence of events, was an injury. Human development is no more than initiated when a new scheme of recurrence is established in one's outward behavior, or one's thinking or willing, or one's perceptiveness and feeling. All three of those, I've erased it, but organism, psyche, spirit, there has to be an integration. Complementary adjustments have to take place on the other levels. Unless they are effected, either the initiated development recedes and atrophies in favor of the dynamic unity of the subject. So you got a new insight, and it could mean a change in your life, then you've got to give your feelings and your organic response a chance to catch up with that. Or otherwise, you're going to give up on it, and you're going to go back to where you were. That's atrophying in favor of the unity, the previous unity. Or else that unity can be sacrificed. If you act too quickly on the new without the rest of it catching up, then one becomes, as he puts it here, a dumping ground for unrelated, unintegrated schemes of occurrence and modes of behavior. So it's complicated. Development, human development is complicated. Fifthly, there's the law of limitation and transcendence, that development is from where we are to where we're going to go, and genuineness is just bringing that into consciousness and living in that tension and letting it shift as you go along. And that's where we'll pick up next week with the law of limitation and transcendence and the law of genuineness, because I really want to give those time. They unfold into a whole theory of moral development and a whole theory of history. Limitation and transcendence is key to the theory of history itself. To the dialectics of the subject, community and culture. So I don't want a short change. That's it. Any questions before we go? If you know that you would like to make this retreat, you can either call yourself or let either guy or myself go. And you can come over.
Is my name Risa Tikisa?
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, all right.